We're here with Todd Robinson. He is the author of A City Within a City and an academic who has studied Grand Rapids and the African-American experience here very carefully, probably more carefully than anybody has ever done it before. It's very nice to sit down and talk to you about Grand Rapids.
It's Welcome. A pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about what went into putting the book together, first of all.
Grand Rapids was on my radar, but it became very much a real choice in terms of studying an extended look at the city's race relations. I found out that there was a rich history. It was rich, but it was underground. Nobody really knew about it. The struggles were real. The people were real. But unfortunately, secondary cities were just not on the map. And Grand Rapids was a secondary city with a history that was being veiled in many respects by the surrounding area, Chicago and Detroit events. So growing up in Springfield, Massachusetts, a secondary city, I related very closely to what was going on here and to the communities and the struggle. And so as I continued to research and write on this project, I knew that this was going to make a huge impact. I didn't know it was going to make this impact for sure, but I was hoping to put secondary cities on the map.
One of the terms that you've been using as you describe the work that you do and you frame the findings of your book is managerial racism. Could you define that term and then tell us what it means for Grand Rapids in particular?
Managerial racism is a term that I've kind of looked at when describing the power relationships between oppressed and dominant groups. In particular, here in Grand Rapids, it focused on the business community. Looking at the interactions, there were concessions that were made from the business community. In many cases, what Grand Rapids attempted to do was veil and conceal some of the severity of the racial issues here in the community through this polite form of managerial racism, which talked about race in a meaningful way and was quick to meet on race and to discuss issues of race, but that had no action behind it. And historically, they were willing to study it and restudy it and study it yet again, but never really implement any of the real changes. So they were managing the situation in ways that continue to keep the resources within the white community in particular, and to benefit their business interests, and to really restrict and to isolate minority communities, in particular the African-American community.
But from a business standpoint, doesn't it make sense that allowing resources to flow in that direction improve business interests at the top as well?
Formulaically, you would think so. in terms of the 40s to the 70s, the African-American population was relatively small. You're talking 11,000 people at various points in time, especially in 1950-ish. It wasn't a desire to incorporate the African-American community. And I'm talking about individuals who are lawyers and doctors and female migrants who came with college education and degrees, and some to the master's level, who were subjected to becoming secretaries or maids or placed way below their status level. It was, as Du Bois talks about, a psychological wage that invested in this notion of whiteness and privilege. But in particular, with respect to the civil rights movement from 40 to roughly 75 that I cover, it wasn't even in the purview of these white business leaders. It was their interest to dress Grand Rapids up to look polite and professional. So they wanted people to believe that the race relations were tame enough that it would not disrupt business with riots or with direct action or anything that might disrupt the day-to-day business operations or cause a company not to want to come in and invest in the community. So they provided some concessions in a way that allowed blacks to believe that they might have opportunity down the road. There might be an opportunity here. So they would enter in and allow the first black to become an AT&T worker or first black to enter one of the GM firms or first black to do this. But from job discrimination to educational inequality, which are very much connected, to housing, which is inextricably connected to schools, you saw that there was just a disinvestment in inner city space.
This was made by our new mayor, the Community Reading Project's Book of the Year. How did you find out about it, and what has it meant as you come back here and visit us?
Well, I found out via email. a quick note from a friend of mine, Melanie, who said the mayor had mentioned you in her State of the Mayor speech. And so as I watched it, she talked about education, she talked about housing, and at each one of those moments, I figured she might put a footnote in there and say, you know, Todd Robinson talks about this in his book. By the time I get to, I don't know, 20 to 25 minutes in, I'm thinking, I didn't hear the reference. But to my delight and to my surprise, she saved the best for last. And she made that announcement that acknowledged my book as the book of the year, which was an amazing tribute to the efforts of the people who lived through the struggle.
You're also working on trying to bring us up to speed to from 1975 to where we are today. What is the Grand Rapids that you're encountering now?
I can sense a movement forming in Grand Rapids. So, you know, I'm hoping that Grand Rapids has made strides to improve upon some of the labors that, again, the people I mentioned in the book work so hard to make happen. Unfortunately, realities, historically speaking, if you don't know your history, you're destined to make similar mistakes. And the mayor's endorsement of the book and asking people to read it is one way of beginning to change some of that history. But there was a lot that happened between 75, when I finished the book, and 2014, roughly, when the book was published. So 85, 95, 2005. I'm interested to see what the documents present. So I'm going to give it the proper respect it deserves and the professionalism it deserves by sitting back and reading through the archives, mining through the materials, talking to the people on the ground and interviewing a number of folks and working in partnership with other scholars to kind of to get a real good sense of what we're looking at here and then beginning to write the story. And quite honestly, the story writes itself. And so it is what it is.
Last question. 2016, you say there's a movement. What's the movement that you're seeing? How's it forming?
My sense in the sections of town that I've been in, the people that I've spoken to, like people are starting to stand up and demand equity, demand moving this process forward. Equality in terms of making sure that everybody has the same is one thing, but people don't start from the same starting point. And so it's important to make sure that we're addressing those needs from where people begin. And I can see it in various, I guess, grassroots organizations. They're out there. Foot soldiers are out there. People are working hard in the community to make changes in Grand Rapids. And it's special to me because in many ways, the system of managerial racism is what they knew that they were up against, but the framework that I provided in the book allows them that term, allows them that understanding. And so now they're chipping away in many ways, like the mustache movement did, to begin to chip away at that system. And so it's coming from different angles, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens here in Grand Rapids as we move forward. But I really do believe that they're on the cusp of some changes, and I hope Grand Rapids is open and ready for that.
Support for Mutually Inclusive comes from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation.